total of five. We have two people today that we're going to interview the governor's appointments to Board of Fisheries. Mr. John Jensen will be first, followed by Mr. Melvin Morris. And we have a limited number of people that are presently signed up to testify. And it's our objective to get through this today. We've, as you recall, we've had these two people schedule two previous meetings and never got to them. So we'd like to get that taken care of today. Okay, with that, we'll go to Mr. John E. Jensen. John, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Afternoon.
Yeah, good to talk to you and apologize for our previous false starts on this. John, could you just give us a quick overview of your background and fishing experience and why you want to do this job?
Yes, Chairman Huggins, I will. And yeah, good afternoon, members of the Senate Resource Committee. I'm representing myself. My name is John E. Jensen. I was born and raised in Petersburg, Alaska. My third generation commercial sport, personal use, and subsistence fisherman. My primary source of income is from commercial fishing. I've been doing this since 1965, about 42 years. I have owned and operated many different commercial fishing vessels, from a 14-foot hand troll skiff to 130-foot king crabbers. I actually owned the skiff. I ran the king crabber. I have participated in fisheries all around the state, from southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, Gulf of Alaska, Alaska Peninsula, Crystal Bay, Bering Sea, Aleutian Islands, and the Western Alaska as far up as Nome. I'm currently vice chair of the Board of Fisheries and chair of the Halibut and Sablefish Committee for Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. If I'm reconfirmed, this will be my third three-year term. I did reapply for this position. I believe my duty as a Board of Fish member is to provide and maintain sustainable fisheries for all Alaskans. When considering a change in regulations, we listen to public testimony, consider written comments submitted before and during the meetings. We consider reports from the committee meetings where public panels present additional information along with reports from local advisory committees. And additional to all that, we take into consideration the Department of Fish and Game's reports. Then we apply the sustainable salmon management policy. We do this in salmon proposals. In summary, I believe there is no one better to serve on the Board of Fish than someone who's been actively involved in the fisheries all their life. I'm here to do what is right for the resource, not for myself. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senate Resource Committee, for hearing me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Any questions or comments for Mr. Jensen at this time? Seeing none, we will go to Mr. Richard Vogt in Mat-Su. Mr. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and Mr. Vogt, put yourself on the record and we'll be proud to hear from you.
I'm Richard K. Vogt and I'm representing myself.
Okay, please continue.
I came up here in 1971 and moved family up to 1974. Fish and game were plentiful, work was not. My first hunting license cost me a quarter. Everyone I knew at that time depended on their freezer, fish and game to hide them over the winter. This carried through until 92. There were some lean years, and fish were harder to find, but they were there. It just took a little longer to get them. In 92, we had to leave to take care of some family business outside. One thing leads to another, and we did not get back to Alaska until 06. We got settled in, and the kids said, Mom and Dad, you're going to be tourists for the summer. You now have to do this. You now have time to do this. So off to the Kenai we went. We went to halibut fishing, caught one over 60 pounds. We left, went to Homer, went to Russian River, fished in the sanctuary.
Yeah, Mr. Vogt, yes, excuse me one. Could you address the nominee, please? Hello, Richard?
Yes.
Yeah, are you there? Could you please speak to the person, Mr. Jensen in this case, that is the nominee?
Certainly, Mr. Jensen. And after we left Homer, it took us about 45 minutes to catch three reds. We went to Stewart, I got gold, turned around, I came home. After recovering from bronchitis, I started calling my fishing buddies, and that's when I found out we had some problems. When I asked them to go fishing one of our old fishing holes, I told them there hasn't been any fish there for years. When I asked them to go to another fishing hole, they told me, well, that's been closed to taking of salmon. I was informed that another favorite fishing spot, it would invariably take all day to catch a fish. The recommendation all around was to fish the Kenai area. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jensen, we have a renewable resource in North Cook Inlet that needs a lot of help now. Some say we need more studies. The problem with studies is that we've already studied the problem, and now is the time to act. I have testimony on escapements both over and under. The science of the argument is it a waste of fish when you have over escapement and the productivity of the fish drop. The plant has been in place for the last 8-10 years, has been under escapement, and this plant is not working. The human intelligence on the bank and on the boat.
Yeah, Richard, can we get you to please sum up?
I'm getting to it right now. The shortage of fish is also impacting other fish in the salmon, rather than the salmon run. We need to save this resource. The commercial fleet, drift cutters, and set netters need to curtail the overtaking of this renewable resource. Some of those users will have to curtail their use so that our kids and grandkids can enjoy this fishing as we knew it, not as it is now. The management for this resource is to be for all the users, not just the commercial fleet, unless I misread that part of the state constitution. And if the personnel and the Board of Fisheries cannot do this, we need to replace them now. Comments such as, we don't care if any salmon get to the Susitna River, when made by more board members, cast serious doubt on the unbiased decisions that need to be made. Please do not reconfirm Mr. Jensen or Mr. Morris. There's no place on earth can beat what we have here, and I like to see it maintained a lot better than it has been. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Vogt. Questions or comments for Mr. Vogt? Seeing none, we next will go to... I'm sorry, Senator Wagner.
Mr. Vogt, you made a statement there that somebody who was on the Board of Fish made the comment that they didn't care whether a salmon got to the Susitna drainage or not. Would you care to tell me who you heard make that comment?
No, I do not.
Then, is that hearsay or did you hear the comment?
I did not hear the comment directly. However, my sources of information are really reliable.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Vogt. Let's now go to Mr. Andy Couch in Mat-Su.
Good afternoon. My name is Andy Couch. I would like to see change on the Board of Fisheries. I think people have been talking about conservation, and I would like to see changes made for conservation of the salmon stock in the Northern District. And Mr. Morris and Mr. Jensen voted to take out regulations from the Northern District Salmon Management Plan in 2005 that at times provided adequate spawning numbers of sockeye salmon to reach the Yetna River. And since those regulations were removed in 2005, after the 2005 board meeting, we had our lowest return of sockeye salmon to the Yetna River. The Department of Fish and Game managed the fishery more conservative in 2006, and we actually made the goal. In 2007, the department went back to more liberal management, and we missed the goal again. And we've been having a hard time making that goal. The Matanuska Valley Advisory Committee submitted a proposal number 138 to the Board of Fisheries. It requested that the Board of Fisheries go back to the 2005 Northern District Salmon Plan Management. This was one of the few proposals that addressed the problem of under escapement to the Yetna River. It was just asking to go back to a system that had better success. When this proposal came up to the subcommittee where all proposals are supposedly going to be discussed, the chairman, Mr. Jensen, said, oh, well, we can't come to consensus on this. Is there somebody opposed? Is there anybody in favor? And then that was the end of the discussion on Proposal 138. Yet our subcommittee looked through proposal after proposal after proposal that would expand the commercial fishery, even though we weren't making the goal in the Northern District. And this just does not seem to follow the process, and certainly doesn't seem to be the mark of somebody who's a fair fairness to all user groups. There was just very few proposals asking to make changes for conservation, and this was one. This is the one that our advisory committee had. It wasn't just a single person, it was a whole group that was asking for this. This proposal had a lot of support from other advisory committees as well, and it was really galling at the Board of Fisheries that we didn't even get the chance to talk about it in subcommittee. Anyway, I've talked before previously, I don't think it's fair that the commercial fisheries should have specific representation larger than they're only one group, and there's four user groups identified. And if we're going to say, oh, well, there's commercial and non-commercial, well, we could say use the same argument. We could say there's sport and there's non-sport, there's subsistence and there's non-subsistence, there's personal use and there's non-personal use. I don't know why one user group that's a very small number of users should be identified for a high number of Board of Fisheries seats. And I would like to see something that more fairly looks at the needs of the other user groups. So thanks for this opportunity to speak.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Couch. Any questions or comments for Mr. Couch? Seeing none, next we will go to Mr. Rod Arno, Outdoor Council.
Yes, Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time and attention. My name is Rod Arno, Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. I've been turning in comments to proposals for the Board of Fishery for two decades. The council represents 47 clubs, 3,000 individual members for a total Alaskan membership of 10,000 Alaskans who harvest wild food and love Alaska. Mr. Chairman, Mel Morris and John Jensen should not be reaffirmed to the Board of Fishery. Mr. Chairman, 30 years ago in December of 1986 meeting, the Board of Fish crashed. It lost the confidence of the people because it failed to recognize and respond to change. With the press and stakeholders' presence, members literally got up from the table and walked out of the room. The Board of Fisheries, being a creation of the legislature, the Senate asked the Senate Advisory Council to study the issue. Reading that October 87 report is chilling. We have virtually moved nowhere in 30 years. Our Board of Fisheries is broken and needs to be restructured. One of the problems that surfaced in 86 was the board failed to recognize the need of the people, chose to focus instead on the needs of the industry. The current board is doing the same thing. Back in 86, the legislature acted by putting the current allocation criteria found in AS 1605-251E1-7 into statute. Collection and analysis of that social economic data was non-existent in 86, and we still don't have it today. If fish were natural gas, the Board of Fish met in Anchorage and told Alaskans last year that they couldn't have any takeout points on the gas pipeline. They just told Alaskans that most of the gas would go to process markets in Seattle and Japan instead of their freezers or on Alaskans' dinner tables. The board, and in fact our entire system of government, operates on a theory known as the consent of the governed. The board can tell us what to do because we allow the board to tell us what to do. In order for the board to maintain our consent, though, it must in turn maintain a level of integrity. Population and demographic changes of Alaska and the health of the fish runs and stocks, which depends largely on the quality of their habitat, require resource managers and allocators to recognize the response to those changes. The current board fisheries, led by the chair, Morrison, vice chair, Jensen, have failed to do so. Mr. Chairman, in the last 6 years, the Board of Fisheries has lost the consent of the majority of Alaskans. In rivers such as the Yukon, the Copper, Susitna, Kenai Peninsula, all take issue with board actions. Personal use crappers in the Juneau area, halibut charters in southeast and south central have gotten little relief from the board. This is not just an Upper Cook Inlet salmon isolated issue. It's time for change. Mel Morris and John Zinchen should be replaced by someone who will respond to the needs of all Alaskans. Please help Alaskans and the future generations of Alaskans to harvest fish as a wild food source. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Arno. There are questions or comments to Mr. Arno? Seeing none, is anyone in the room want to speak to Mr. Jensen in this case? Seeing no one, and no one has signed up. Is that correct, Sharon? Okay. I have a question here from Mr. Ricky Geese, who has been online for the two previous sessions and did not get to speak. And I'm just going to ask his first question. I'll read it. To Mr. Jensen, this is for yourself. At the most recent Upper Cook Inlet Board of Fisheries meeting, the Board of Fish declared Susitna sockeye salmon a stock of concern in a northern district. And Fish and Game drafted the Susitna sockeye salmon action plan. However, the only management actions for conservation contained in that plan seem to have been to liberalize commercial fishing opportunity in Cook Inlet. Can you explain this apparent contradiction, and are you comfortable with it? And I read the question. I wasn't there, but could you address that, Mr. Jensen?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as best I can. It does sound contradictory, but the reason we provided for more fishing time is to prevent the overescapements, the huge overescapements they've been having in the Kenai Basila, which, from information given to us, causes damage to the resource. And at the same time, we are managing for at least the low end of the escapement for the Susitna system. And those are three things we can control. I think that's going to provide for a good fishery and a healthy stock. In conjunction with that management plan, there's also a request for, I think, $10 million worth of studies over the next 5 years. And I think that's been presented to the Finance Committee. I think it's in the works there. I'm not sure how it's going. I've been following all the different bills that are going through legislature, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to make one more comment on the total Upper Cook Inlet sport harvest. In the 77 to 95, it was 385,000 fish a year. In 96 to 06, it's 563,000 average year, 564 almost. That's a 55% increase in sport fish. That tells me that we're getting lots of fish up there. And some of the data of uncertainty is the escapement levels going into those systems because of the different types of sonar systems we're using and stuff to evaluate the escapement. From the evidence I heard at the meeting, it told me that they are getting at least close to their escapement goals, and with the new information and the new studies, we should be able to see that real soon on how this new fishing plan is going to work, Mr. Chair.
If questions or comments? Yes.
Let me carry that a little further than Mr. Jensen has, Mr. Chairman. One of the big disagreements at the board was doing away with the windows. And the windows were time-sensitive, hour-to-hour-sensitive dates when they would open and close the set nets on the east side. Well, Susitna fish and Yetna fish the upper Cook Inlet fish don't come clear to the east side unless there's a huge wind that blows days in a row. They generally stay more in the middle and traverse up Cook Inlet. The thing they've done to manage that and keep the drift fleet off of them is to bring the drift fleet to the west side in a corridor. So what they did at the board did not take away from the biologist's ability to put the drift fleet in a corridor and keep them off of those who sit in the fish. So the big controversy is about the windows. And really the windows have to do with managing the fish that escape in the Kasilof and the Kenai. And they didn't say that the biologists couldn't manage using the corridors. In other words, they can give you 5 miles off the eastern shore. Or they generally, what they do is they set up points and you just program them into your computer and your chart recorder, and then you have a line and you can fish to the east of that line. That's the way they manage that fishery. And it's confusing. Unless you fished in that fishery for a long time, you really don't understand what happens. So, and the commercial fishermen holler about that, and it's a fact of life. That's what we've done the last 8-10 years. So I don't think the board made a mistake by getting rid of the windows, because you over-escape a system as much as they had the Kenai. Yeah, there's a lot of reds up there today, but they're going to be reds up there 5-6 years from now. That's the question, and that's why they did that, I believe. Is that not right, Mr. Jensen?
That's correct, Senator Wagner. I think the department's going to try to stay as close to as predictable to the plan guidelines as they were last year, but they will go into them if we have to stop these huge over-escapements into the Kenai and the Kasilof.
Right.
Yeah, and thank you, Senator Wagner. Mr. Jensen, there's one thing that you said that makes me nervous, and I know it makes some of my my friends in the Upper Cook Inlet nervous. You talked about you'd at least meet the low end of the escapement. And unfortunately, you know, we have rounded down escapement goals for a number of years, and I'm not looking for the low end of the escapement, to be quite honest. That disturbs me. That's just a comment. But thank you very much. At this point in time, we will go to Mr. Unless there are other questions for Mr. Jensen. At this time, we will go to Mr. Mel Morris. Mr. Morris, are you there?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. This is Mel Morris.
Yes, Mr. Morris, if you would put yourself on the record and any affiliation you have, and if you could just give us a quick overview of your biography and your experience in this field of fishing and on the board, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mel Morris. I live in Kodiak with my wife, Sally. My family came here in the mid-40s. My dad worked for the Navy. I went through grade school and high school here on the Navy base. I went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and graduated in 1962, Bachelor of Science in Wildlife Management. I worked for the Territory 2 summers, the old Alaska Department of Fisheries. Worked 1 summer for the game division, 1 year for the game division. Worked for ADF&G for 2 years in Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim, and went into the Army for 2 years. Had a total of about 8 years with ADF&G, ending up as the shellfish management biologist for the Kodiak area. I left the department in 1968, went to work in the seafood industry for 32 plus years. I retired in 2000, started a sales company, M&M Marketing, that year. I was appointed to the Board of Fisheries in 2003, reappointed in 2005. I've been chairman for the last 2 years, vice chairman 1 year before. I'm a member of the Stellar Sea Lion Mitigation Committee under Endangered Species, co-chairman of the Joint Protocol Committee with the chairman of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morris. And we've already heard from the people that are online. There are three of them. Are there any further questions or comments on Mr. Morris for the people online? Hearing none. In the room, we have Mr. Jerry McKinn. Jerry, would you come forward, please? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Jerry McCune. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska. I'm not going to be real long-winded because it's been a long day for you guys. So United Fishermen of Alaska supports the reappointment of Mel Morris and John Jensen.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Yes, Senator Stevens.
No.
Just in the letter here, Mark Pencil, I guess, signed up from the United Fishermen back on March 28th, says that Mr. Morris and Mr. Jensen showed fairness in listening to the public and the ability to analyze complicated issues. And would you agree with those, agree with that, that that's how these two fellows operate?
To the chair, Senator Stedman, yes. They have a lot of experience and all around the state since this will be their third term, if I'm not mistaken, for both of them, I think. And so they have a lot of experience with the different fisheries, and when my experience at the Cook Inlet meeting was that there was 115 people testify, there was committees, there was a lot of people talking, and all the board members, including Mr. Morris and Mr. Jensen, took the time to talk with all different groups, all different people, whether they were sport, personal use, or commercial. So I thought they handled the meeting real well.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have known Mr. Morris since 1970. I've known him as a fine gentleman and well-educated and a pillar in the community and just really a great guy to chat with. And he's been there through so many important parts of the industry. So you can imagine my shock, Mr. Morris, when I heard what a rotten scoundrel you really were and all the comments we've had against you that you're unfair and dictatorial and opposed to sports fisheries. And so I want to give you a chance, Mr. Morris, since you're an old friend, to tell me how could so many people be so wrong about you? Why do they misunderstand what you are about? And I think I know what you are about, but could you explain to us why there is such a disagreement about your tenure on the board, which I think has been exemplary? But there is an enormous reaction in opposition to both you and Mr. Jensen. And could you just tell us why did that happen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Stephen. I guess everybody's got a right to their own opinion, and certainly this has become such a controversial issue with Cook Inlet that it seems like there's no give in any of the stakeholders, but everybody's looking for his piece of the action to improve, and if it doesn't, why, I assume that's the primary problem. But as far as the as far as what has actually happened in the Upper Inlet, the commercial fishery, the set net fishery, has declined by 80% over the last 20 years. At the same time for Chinook, and at the same time the sport fisheries increased by 60%. This I can give you those numbers, like sockeye, it's commercial fisheries down 78%. The sport fisheries up 100%. I think everybody's looking for a little more, and I don't know where I can come up with extra fish. What we've tried to do, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stevens, what we've tried to do is first consider the resources. And when people consider what the windows were causing, the fact that we made it possible for the biologists to step into the window to protect from over-escaping Kenai and the sea law, that was clearly a conservation move. We've got over-escapement for the past 10 years in both systems, basically. That if right now, Fish and Game Department is concerned about the survival of smolder coming out under half a gram, which starvation studies show are not going to survive when they go into salt water. They're under 10% body fat. Fish and Game is very concerned about what's happening in the years to come. Mr. Senator Wagner pointed out we may be doing okay at the moment, but what's gonna happen when these fish don't return? I think we're looking at some really serious issues. In the upper, again, in the northern district, we did make the Yetna Susitna a stock of concern. It's a stock of yield concern because for the last 5 years, the harvest has not reached the historical averages. And the reason the harvest has not reached them is because they haven't been able to fish. And the reason they haven't been able to fish is because they haven't been able to correctly enumerate the fish going into the Susitna and the Yetna, because the Bendix counters are not working correctly. Last 2 years, they put in weirs only on 3 out of 27 systems, and those 3 systems all showed that they had at least 95 to 130,000 fish going just through the weir, while the sonar showed that they were a long ways away from needing the escapement goal. So we feel that by making that a stock of concern, it raises the level of concern for finding out what the true answers are. We know pike and beaver ponds are an issue. Alexander Creek is a major concern, and it's we've undertaken some major research and action on Alexander Creek in order to try to find out how to deal with the fish. But I would just have to say, Mr. Chairman, that and Senator Stevens, that I guess if people aren't getting what they want, they're going to have to look to somebody like me and say, he's not getting it done. But I personally believe we are, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mel. I appreciate that. Thank you for years of service to the state. I did want to ask one further question. I think there's a misconception about M&M Marketing. Could you explain to us what your current position is, your employment, and what M&M Marketing does?
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Yeah, M&M Marketing, as far as what I do in Cook Inlet, that's basically about the only action I've really taken in recent years, is I provide quality control for a program that Ocean Beauty has with Ocean Fisheries Limited of Canada. And when Ocean Beauty superintendent tells me that he's going to put up some fish for Ocean, I go down to the plant and I inspect fish for basically quality, but mainly skin color, meat color, freshness. I watch them pack the fish into ice totes, belly ice and layer ice, and then watch them weigh the fish and put them into trucks. And sometimes I have to help find trucks for Ocean Beauty, but it's always for their account. I just have a broker I work with. I don't buy any fish. I don't sell any fish. I don't have any control over the fish in any way, shape, or form, physically, financially. I don't even know who catches the fish, except that they're caught in Cook Inlet. I wouldn't even know that if somebody brought in some fish. Could have been caught somewhere else. But I don't know. All I know is that Gilmetters catch them, and I have nothing to do with paying for them, buying them, or selling them, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Yep. And thank you for that answer, Mr. Morris. Other questions or comments from Mr. Morris? Mr. Morris, Ricky Geese, Executive Director, Kenai Sports Fishing Association, asks two questions, which I will read the second one to you. I read the first one to Mr. Jensen. And Mr. Geese can't be with us. He was with us for the previous two meetings, which we did not get to your two names, and I apologize to you for that. The Susitna Sockeye Salmon Action Plan basically granted fishing game all the discretionary power and flexibility the department wanted in Upper Cook Inlet to successfully meet salmon escapement goals. Are you confident with all the new management flexibility that the regional commercial fisheries manager has that minimum escapement in the northern district will be achieved? End of question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, Mr. Chairman, if I may, while we have an action plan, people have to realize that's a living document. That doesn't die period at the end of the sentence. That document is to be reviewed. We expect Fish and Game to give us the best available information as to how they're going to achieve that action plan. And there may be many changes to it. But certainly I have confidence that the department, maybe not just through the commercial fisheries biologist, but through the commissioner for Fish and Game, who, by the way, attended every minute of our meeting in the Upper Cook Inlet meeting in Anchorage, through him, the entire staff, and all the input that we can gather from our research people, our geneticists who are working hard on these programs. I believe that, yes, we can find out what the real escapement is into these rivers. We can find out what the real escapement goal should be. And Mr. Chairman, I think that's still perhaps an issue, and we need to know what the productivity of those lakes now that they're polluted with or infested with pipe. So I think there's many, many questions still to be answered, Mr. Chairman, but I do believe I do have confidence that the staff and the commissioner and the legislature, whoever is required to help us with this, will do so, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Mr. Morris. Let me ask, if you were king for a day, and you had the unilateral authority to bring about some action, in this case, in the Upper Cook Inlet, to be able to deliver fish to competing demands, what would you do?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not really sure what I would do. I have to pretty much assume that the people that are responsible for the fisheries are going to do their jobs, and I don't think any one person could step in and give you an answer to that question. I think it's too comprehensive for me or anybody else who wanted to change for a day. I think it would. I think it's more of a long-term solution, and that there'll be many people involved besides just one. I'm sorry, I can't answer.
Okay. Well, let me ask you just a couple of real short questions. I am not advocating for the cessation of commercial fishing, but what do you think the result would be if we didn't commercial fish this year in Cook Inlet? What do you think that would do to the escapement in Upper Cook Inlet?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in the Kenai and the Kasilof, they would be over-escaped, as we've already seen, even with the commercial fishery. We're over escaping by roughly 700,000 fish per year, which amounts to about 7 million fish over the last 10 years, and somewhere around the $40-45 million loss for the peninsula in terms of lost opportunity. I think you could probably double or triple that number. I think the PU fishery is taking, 300,000 to 400,000 fish, and pretty much unlimited fishing time. I think it's from 1st July to the end of July. They're not fishing at night. They could open that if they wanted to. But I think something like 10 or 11% of the people are actually catching their limits, and I don't see where that would increase particularly. I think we'd beat down the habitat if too many more people got down there. I think in the sport fisheries taking like a 250,000 fish out of Kenai, even with an over escapement of 400,000. So obviously neither of those could stop the influx of fish, and I think our lakes, the euphotic zone, would be further eroded, and perhaps we'd see something like we see over in the Quijac now, where back in 84, 85, they tried to match up roots fruit stock. Turned out that there hadn't been any fish coming back to Quijac. Now, I think this last year they got 6 million fish back off of a run of 1 million. So here's a system that could produce 30, 40 million fish easily that's actually gone right down the tube, in my opinion, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Mr. Morris, how about the drainages of MacArthur, Beluga, Susitna, and Yetna?
What did you want to know about them?
If we didn't commercial fish next year, what would that do to the escapement in those drainages?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming you would see an escapement of somewhere around 100,000 to 200,000 king. The sockeye would be... I think I'm not really positive what you would see, but without any commercial fishery on sockeye, you'd see another 40,000 sockeye, you'd see another 40,000 coho. And now the coho runs have been going from like 1.3 to 2.4 million, and you'd have your sport fish harvest out of that. And it can take a second. I could probably come up with an answer for you, Mr. Chairman.
That's good, Mr. Morris. I'm just trying to get some feedback. Since you have the most experience, at least in this room and online here today with commercial fishing on the board. Other questions or comments from Mr. Morris? Senator Wagner.
I just going to comment, and I didn't bring the paperwork with me because I didn't know we were going to get this detail. On my desk, I've got all the escapements of the upper Cook Inlet, lower Cook Inlet, all that. And if you want that, I'll give you a copy of it. But the thing you want to compare to is take a look at 1989. That's the year of the Exxon oil spill. There wasn't one drift gill net put in Cook Inlet. Not one. The set netters fish. And there was very little oil close to the beach. In fact, there was very little oil in Cook Inlet. Truth be known. However, if you look at those escapements and compare everything on the average, it doesn't show a lot of difference. Like I say, there went one drift net. So, and that kind of goes back to when we've been fishing closures on the east side and being brought in on the east shore. So that's something that you can look at and compare, and I'll get those for you.
One last question, Mr. Morris, and we don't need an extensive answer from you, but I've heard a number of people when they give their rationale about the value of the fishery and where the money really lies, and if you're talking to sports fishermen that are my neighbors, they say, if we had more fish up in upper Sioux, that the value of the fish is much greater than it would be to the commercial fleet based on tourists and all the activity. You think that's kind of true, or you ever thought about it?
Mr. Chairman, of course, I thought about it a good deal, and I believe it's certainly correct in many instances. And I think, in some of the numbers I've heard, I know my wife would be waiting for me with a baseball bat if I was going out, coming back, sport fishing with a $25 a pound fish. But I understand that if you're talking about sport fishermen that come up from the States and buy their out-of-state license and take a trip out on a charter boat, and by the time they get done, they've got some real dollars in it. By the same token, I think you have to look, again, like I mentioned earlier, we've lost $45 million, in my opinion, down on the peninsula just through over-escaping commercial fishery, fish that could have been taken perhaps, or a good share of them. We've actually seen over a million fish flying in the drift net harvest down there. And it's not just a dollar a pound that they get for the fish. The fish go into the plant, there's more processing costs, they're shipped out of the state, got to go to the first or second wholesale or retail value. You're talking about some real numbers, and the same thing is true with, like you say, A lot of people from your community go out looking for fish and spend a lot of money in the process. But again, I don't think that you can necessarily compare. I think we're comparing apples and oranges to try to come down to a single number that would indicate, yes, it's more valuable all the time to be a sport fish, for the sport fishermen to the state of Alaska, and other times they know it's a commercial fish. So I think, I don't mean to beat the same depth, but I don't think there's a single answer for all situations, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Morris. And we have one last person, and we'll be closing public testimony, that has called in, is Mr. Howard Delo. And he is, I think, a board member, but he is, in this case, testifying for himself. So, Howard, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
Yeah, please put yourself on the record, and your affiliation. We'll be proud to hear from you.
Thank you, sir. My name is Howard Delo. I was appointed by Governor Palin approximately a year ago to fill a seat on the Board of Fish. I have 1 year's worth of time out of the 3-year appointment under my belt, and I'm continuing to learn with each new meeting as how the whole thing works. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You have anything else to add, Mr. Delo?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I've been listening. I haven't made all of the Senate resource hearings, but I've caught, I think, all but one.
Right. And just to refresh you, if you just joined us, Mr. Dealer, we have Mr. Morris and Mr. Jensen that are being considered today for the board.
Yes, sir. I understand that. I've been listening to today's meeting. I missed last Friday. These two gentlemen have been taking a beating from my part of the country because of this past Cook Inlet meeting. And I just want to say right up front, I would like to see both of these gentlemen reconfirmed. Now, having said that, I will also say that we have been on opposite sides of the voting record on several different proposals, different perspectives, that sort of thing. But my point is, both of these gentlemen bring a vast amount of knowledge, a broad perspective. They have been through this process for 6 years, and amazingly enough, are willing to ask for another 3-year appointment. This can be a brutal process. In dealing with these various fisheries, especially Cook Inlet, and I'm sure I will find several others as my term continues, the board is being asked to deal with a fully allocated resource. There is no spare. And for one group to gain anything, somebody else loses. The Department of Fish and Game made several recommendations in the Cook Inlet meeting about things that they felt biologically would be beneficial to the management in Cook Inlet, to some of the other problems. Again, Mr. Jensen and Mr. Morris and I didn't always agree in the way we voted on various proposals, but I really have learned a lot from these gentlemen. I appreciate their perspective. I appreciate their knowledge. I appreciate especially Mr. Morris's maturity, having been chair and having dealt with a lot of this stuff and bringing a very unique perspective and a lot of wisdom and insight into some of these decisions. We've had some heated deliberations. We've had some interesting discussions off the record on several of these proposals. And I find both of these gentlemen to be very honorable, very knowledgeable, very sincere in their desire to do, number one, what's best for the resource, and number two, to try and be as fair as possible in the allocation of the surplus available, if there is some, once the resource itself has been protected. And I think that's where the rub comes in. Everybody's going to have a little bit different idea about what's fair. And so I think that's the basis of a lot of the discussion and dissension over these two gentlemen's renomination. But personally, I would like to see both of them return to the board, and because I think we want a broad diversity of opinions and perspectives on that board. You don't want everybody to bring a commercial fishing perspective. You don't want everybody to bring a sports fishing perspective. You want a diversity. And I think these gentlemen bring a nice diversity in contrast to some of the, to the existing board and some of the other members and the perspectives they have. I think it makes for a good balance and some lively discussions. And with that, I'll be quiet and thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Senate Resources Committee for listening.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. Questions? Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Mr. Dello, in your opinion, and I know it's difficult with your other board members on the line to answer this question, perhaps, but in your opinion, is the board balanced as between sport and commercial fish?
In my opinion, I would say yes. It's interesting to me, and listening to some of the earlier testimony and some of the earlier Senate resource and possibly even the House resource committee hearings on these nominations, some people said that if the board was commercial fisheries oriented, I didn't hear too much in the way of sport fish oriented. When I went through my confirmation hearings last year, I was labeled as a sport fish guy. Yet I had to argue at the Cook Inlet meeting to be allowed to participate on several proposals because of the connection I have through Mary to a SetNet permit, i.e. I'm being viewed as a commercial guy. Some of the other members of the board were also labeled as sport fish people, and if you count noses, or if I count the noses of the existing members, it would be minimum 4-3 sport fish for the labels that people have been given. I don't think that the labels are accurate and appropriate because, as Mr. Jensen stated, he's a commercial fisherman, he's a sports fisherman, he's a personal use fisherman, and he's done subsistence fishing. I can't really claim the commercial end, but I've been a sports guy and I've been a personal use person, and I think I understand both of those perspectives. Labeling is not fair. That's why we need a broad perspective of knowledge from people who are upstanding members of their communities, or at least considered to be. 2 years from now, when I'm going through this, we'll see how everybody thinks. But I think, yes, it is a balanced board. I think there's a broad perspective, and I think that several of the board members actually participate in two or more of the different aspects of fisheries, be it subsistence, be it personal use, be it commercial, or be it sport. And I think that diversity of view helps in a lot of the discussion and balance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dello. Other follow-up questions? Committee members, we have before us now Mr. Jensen and Mr. Morris, both of whom were reappointed 3/12/08 to go through 6/30/11. And with that, are there final questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for a motion.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we send the names of Mr. Morris and Mr. Jensen forward to a joint session of the legislature.
Okay, and I'll read to you what we're signing here. In accordance with Alaska Statute 3905080, the Resources Committee reviewed the following, and that's Mr. Jensen and Mr. Morris, and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. Is there any objections?
No.
Seeing none.
I want to ask Mr. Dello a question.
We have for whom?
Mr. Dello.
Oh, hey, Howard, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Wagner has a question for you.
Yeah, this isn't a question about the confirmation, but I know your background as a biologist, and I just want to know what you think. You know, for years and years and years, I've been here 40 years. We have the hearings every 3 years on different areas in Alaska. And most of the salmon we deal with are 2-4 or more than 4-year species of fish. Wouldn't it make more sense if we had the hearings on a 4-year rotation instead of a 3-year rotation? And maybe give you guys a break for 1 year?
I understand your argument, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I don't know that if it went to a two-year or a four-year or even a five-year. 3 years right now, at least, seems to be working in that at least the board gets to address every fishery in the state within the span of a three-year time period. There are mechanisms available in the board procedures that would allow if an emergency arose or some unforeseen result from a board action, something that was negative impact on the resource or on the user group involved with a particular situation, that there are procedures available where things can be viewed and dealt with by the board, and they use the term out of cycle. If I don't know that 4 years, we had a three-year cycle this last Cook Inlet meeting. There were something, I think, in excess of 300 proposals in just that one meeting for Cook Inlet. If we went to a four-year or a five-year, you know, you're looking then at a meeting that may be 3 weeks or a month long. I'm not sure that would be a reprieve for the board members. Several of the folks on the board work for a living, and having to take 3 weeks or a month off to attend the meeting could have a significant impact on their ability to earn a livelihood, as well as, and that's current board members, when you're looking down the road, that could have a significant impact on the pool of people that would be available to be able to sit on the board. There are a lot of very qualified people out there, but they can't afford the time as the board process currently exists. And if it gets expanded too much, I can see in certain areas that we Cook Inlet for sure. I have yet to go through a Bristol Bay meeting, but I expect it's not too far behind. I understand that things can get a little lively in Southeast on occasion. Extending it any significant amount of time, like 4 years or 5 years, may actually just compound the process of getting the business done rather than trying to expedite it. But that's speculation. That's just one opinion, and I appreciate you asking. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and the reason I was asking that, you know, if you make decisions this February, this last February, and change the management plan of Cook Inlet to try and get, hopefully, a better harvest in the Kasiloff and Kenai, and at the same time still try and get a maximum amount of fish up into the northern district, you aren't going to know what that run did that you put up in there 3 years from that time. That's my only problem, because you can't react to what you did. In other words, you don't have that parent year coming back, so you know if it was successful or not. And that's what I was getting at. And I know we got 4 year silvers, we got 4 year reds, we got 5 year reds, we got 6 year reds. King's the same way. But it just seemed to me like a 4 year process at least gives you an idea of the 4 year fish that are coming back. So thank you for your comment.
Hey, Howard, thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you here not later than mid April.
Okay. They were muting me and unmuting me, so I missed your comment there, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you in mid-April. Take care of yourself.
I will, and I look forward to chatting with you, and maybe we can do a little fishing.
Okay. Thanks. And with that, we're adjourned.
Okay. We're satisfied now.